which are made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all, and 9 made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. So Judy, we're looking forward to hearing what you have to say.
Hi, Cav. You gonna?
I'm gonna try.
Okay.
All right.
I know you've had a lot of experience at it.
Yeah.
Here we go. Lovely ceiling. Now there we are. Hi, everybody.
You guys here?
Great. You did a great job, Kevin. Once again.
All right.
Oh, he is the man of the hour, is he not? Good evening, everyone. My name's Judy, and I'm an alcoholic. And, boy, it's freezing here in Ohio. We're going to warm up tomorrow. Listen, how about we, will you take a minute and help me open with the serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Yeah, there we go. That's a tall order in my life. Courage, wisdom, serenity. Oh, I didn't have any of that when I got here. Thank goodness I hung around with you people long enough to realize some of those things to come true in my life. I have some, you know, I take notes at meetings and write down little blips that I hear that I think might help me, and I like to go back to them, and I've been reading some of them as I've been presenting the steps for y'all. And tonight I have a couple that that I really like. And the first one is, nobody arrives here empty-handed. We all have luggage, huh? Nobody's unique to that. We all arrive with baggage, with some guilt and shame and remorse. And, you know, the solution is here in the 12 steps. So thank goodness for that. And then the other one I like, it says, before you break out of prison, you need to realize that you're locked up. You know, I had no idea how carrying resentments and dislike and anger, and in my case, defiance, I didn't realize how that was holding me back from fulfilling a purpose or being of service to my fellow man or to God. I couldn't see it. Kind of just like when we got here, you know, we were blind to the fact that we had a problem with alcohol. You know, I didn't come here because I wanted to stop drinking. I came here because I wanted you to teach me how to drink. And I wanted to drink and not get in trouble because it just seemed my life had gone to hell. And my history was drink trouble, and I wanted that to stop. Well, thankfully it did. Now, when we're talking about steps 8 and 9, 8 actually is a fairly easy step because you just take the names from your resentment list, from your sexual conduct list, and from your harms caused other lists that you completed in step 4, and you make a list of all those names and just put it on a sheet of paper. Just write the names down. And then you've completed, well, you haven't completed step 8, but you've made the list. It says, made a list of all people we had harmed and, two parts, list and became willing to make amends, what, to them all? Oh, dear God. I didn't realize I had to have all those names on the list. That's number one. And number two, I just knew there were several on that list that I was never going to make amends to. And my sponsor was so great. She said, we're not gonna get excited about the ones you think you're never gonna make. She said, we're just gonna start with the ones that you feel you can make. Now, before I had Mary as a sponsor, I kind of, in my own way, without any guidance whatsoever, decided I was going to, you know, I knew how to work these steps. And I went to confession, and I figured that was a good step 4 and 5. 1, 2, 3, I just knew. I didn't do anything. I didn't think about anything. I just figured I'm going to meetings. Everything's good. And 4 and 5, I went to confession. And then 6 and 7, I just thought, you know, if there is a God, and there probably isn't, you know, he could probably help me with a few things. And then 7 and 8, I had some real pressing things. I had stolen a bathing suit when I was in high school, and that bothered me. And I had stolen some funds from 2 employers in Pennsylvania. And other than that, you know, I caused some harm to my children, and, you know, that was about the extent of, you know, what I needed to make amends for. When I went to confession, and in my mind, I figured I was doing step 5, you know, the priest said, you know, I could say some prayers and ask for forgiveness, you know. But, you know, the steps told me that I had to go and actually do something. So I got in my car, and I drove to Pennsylvania, and I made what I considered were amends to 2 employers, the 2 employers that I stole from. And I was really afraid, and my thoughts were they're probably going to send me to jail. And I thought, well, that would probably be all right, because as terrible as I felt about myself, I felt if the kids had someone else to bring them up, that would probably be best rather than me. And so if they wanted to send me to jail, that probably was going to be a good thing for the kids. I mean, this is my thinking, you know, with like 6 months of sobriety. And not, my sponsor didn't know anything about this. I didn't tell her, I just did it. Because, you know, I'm so good, I know how to do this. And I think the amends went fairly well. And I said, you know, I could set up a payment plan, you know, of like $5 a month. And both of the employers said, you know, that's not necessary, Judy. What we would like you to do is continue with AA. Don't drink, stay sober, and stay in Ohio. Because, you know, we haven't missed you, so just stay there. So, yeah, I had a neighbor that I caused some harm to, and I went and I made amends with him, and he was always at the ready to help me when I was in a drunken stupor and the kids needed something. Or I remember one year we had a terrible snowstorm and I had no heat, and he came down, and no one had any heat because the power was out and the lines were down, and he helped start a nice fire in the fireplace so that, you know, we could have some heat in the house. And I made amends to him, and found out that he also was in a recovery program, and he'd been watching me and hoping that I'd end up in a 12-step program. So that was very interesting. So then I came home and I thought, I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to be a good parent and everything's going to be great. Well, you know the result of that. Everything was okay for, you know, a couple of days, and then I was right back to what crazy street. So I don't know how it came about that, in fact, I don't think I ever really told my first or second sponsor that I had done that, any of that. I really don't think I told anyone. I just knew, you know, I was doing this A&A thing the way it was supposed to be done. When I got Mary, she was a little more intuitive. And she was wondering, you know, what had I done in the past and how had I done it, and you know, to get an idea of where I was now, although it was pretty clear to anyone who talked to me more than 5 minutes where I was. I was pretty much still in hell, you know. So she had a good take on where I was emotionally and spiritually. And, of course, physically you could see, you know. So thank God for her is all I can say. And she was the one who just guided me with the help of this big book to incorporate the steps in a meaningful way that would produce consequences that were positive. And she was the one who led me by her actions and demonstrated actionable things you could do to become better. I think I told you in her and I working step four, what she told me was, she always told me the reason we work the steps is real simple because, and hear this everyone, because it's very important, if we don't, I promise you, you'll go back out. Maybe not tomorrow or next week or next month, but eventually you will. And I've seen it over and over again. And I came to believe that. And of course, I wholeheartedly believe it now because the proof is evident everywhere that I look in my community. People who come in and don't really apply the principles and the steps and take an active part in the program that we have, go back out. And I don't know why that. I don't know why they do that, but they do. All right. So Mary said to me, the reason that step four is so important is because if you wanted to go to California and you didn't know you were leaving from Ohio and instead you were leaving from Florida, you'd probably get lost or have a hard time getting there with directions from Florida. You wouldn't be able to find the route. You'd be off the journey. You know, you'd get lost. And she said, without a fourth and fifth step, without recognizing where you are right now and where it is that you want to go, you're gonna have a hard time, you know, living out the rest of your life with any kind of direction, with any kind of purpose, with any kind of real benefit. So it's important that you have a look at where you are now so you can then begin to plan how you're going to get to where you want to be. Now, I also shared with you in an earlier step that she had me write a list of adjectives that described the kind of person I wanted to be. And it was nothing that I had attained thus far in my life. And those things included adjectives such as I wanted to be sober, I wanted to be courageous, I wanted to be tender, I wanted to be kind, I wanted to be non-judgmental. And the list went on. And I really wanted to learn how to have those characteristics in my life. And so the way that she put step four to me was not with any kind of fear or, you know, I don't know. I guess sometimes in the room I overhear things like, oh, step four is so hard and, you know, golly, you know, you got to be careful and who do you trust and all that. Well, that wasn't my experience. And, you know, if that's happening to you, you know, please talk to someone with some time or some experience so that you can get straightened out on that and really just look at it as a means of, you know, creating a map for your future And if you want to go somewhere other than where you are right now, which if you're like me, it was pretty much in hell, you know, if you want to get out of there, get out of that prison, get out of the guilt, shame, remorse, you know, you have to get busy on the steps and take action. So I had my list, and I knew in my mind the ones I'm not going to make amends to. I did share with Mary several of them, not all of them, because I thought, oh my God, she'll fire me if she knows I'm not planning on making amends to probably at least half of these idiots. I mean, look what they did to me. I'm not doing it. And but I didn't tell her that. I said, there's a few that I'm sorry I'm not making amends to. And she said, well, we're not talking about the ones you're not going to make amends to, but I want to focus on, you know, what we can do today. What is an actionable thing you can do today? Pick three that you can make amends to in the next 2 weeks. In the next 2 weeks, are you crazy? She said, no, action and more action is what's required. And how long do you want to hang on to this garbage anyway? Let's go. Pick three. Well, I picked three. So she said, you can write out your amends and you can share them with me. Now, this is something that I do with the girls that I sponsor. And Mary was, she just taught me so well. You know, for instance, I'm going to use the resentment of my mother, and I'm going to share with you how that came about, that I made amends to her. I think I shared last week, Mary said I had to pray for her, and I was praying that she die and that it'd be very painful and there'd be a lot of blood. And I, you know, I prayed that for a long time. I'm saying years. And at year 12, I knew that I know you're not going to believe it. Year 12, you're thinking to yourself, what the hell were you doing for 12 years? Not much, I guess, you know, but I didn't drink. I kept going to meetings, and I made a lot of amends, but I didn't make any amends to my mom. And the day came when it was necessary for me to make amends to her, because Mary asked me point blank, what is your problem? You are able to forgive women who have done the same damn thing as your mom has done, that are in the rooms, and you're very good friends with them, and you're jovial with them, and you've forgiven them, and you guys move on, and you're like, you know, soul sisters. What is preventing you from forgiving your mother? After all, she does have a disease. Oh, gosh. I mean, that was just so in my face. And I had really been struggling with this. And the only thing I ever wanted from as long as I can remember is a good relationship with my mom. I mean, I really and truly loved her. We just never got along. And I just figured in my mind it was never going to happen. And the fear that she wouldn't want to have anything to do with me was overwhelming and preventing me, paralyzing me from moving forward. So if you have any of that, don't feel alone. I had it too. So Mary said, well, here's what I want you to do. She said, you know, you're going to make your amends. And she had me write out. And, you know, she said, I want your mom to know the things that you did that caused harm. Like, you know, I'm sorry that I stole a good night's sleep from you when you didn't know where I was. Well, I never would have thought of that on my own. I'm sorry that I was not able to be the daughter that you deserved. And I wasn't. I was not capable of that because I had no clue of what was going on. And that wasn't anyone's fault. It's just the way it was in our house. And I'm really sorry that we haven't been able to, you know, have a kind conversation. And mostly that's on my part because I don't even want to, you know, I didn't even want to be on the phone with you long. I was too fearful. And then she said, I want you to ask your mom this question. And she said, the question is, you're going to say, Mom, what do I need to change about my actions and my language so you and I can get along better? And I said, you got to be flipping kidding me. I'm not asking my mom that. You're nuts. And she said, well, you can think about it, but this is what I want you to do. Oh, dear God. So it was the next day. And I said, okay, I'm ready. I can't put it off anymore. I'm dying. I'm going to do it. And I had a conversation with my mom. She wanted to talk on the phone. Mary said, when you make amends, it's important to ask the receiver, first of all, are you open to hearing amends? Because maybe they're not. And then if they're not, then you're not going to force your way in. And then you're going to say, can we meet? And if we can't meet, would you be interested in a phone call or a written amends? Give them the option. Whatever, you don't want to put them in harm's way, or you don't want to have them feeling anxious, and maybe they don't want to see your sick little face. So that's what I did, and my mom said a phone call is fine. And so we were on the phone, and I made amends, and you know, the phone got quiet, and then I said, and Mom, I'm really interested in your answer to this question. And I posed that question, and she I could tell she was struggling, and she said, there's only two things, Judy, that I wish you would change about your actions and what you say. And she said, the first one is, you know, I wish you would come for longer periods of time for family get-togethers. That was the one thing. And then secondly, she said, I wish you would call me more often. I always have to call you. So, I mean, that surprised me. So I said, oh, Mom, I am certainly more than willing to do both of those things. Now, my mom was still drinking. And when I would go to family functions, I would go late and leave early. And I told her, I said, Mom, that's the reason I do that, because I don't want to be involved in, you know, some of the craziness that happens at the end of a get-together with our family. And I just figure it, you know, something was better than nothing. Well, she didn't she understood when I told her, but that isn't why she thought I was doing it. And then the miracle of miracle happened, and guess what? She said, what do I need to change about my behavior and my language so that you and I can have a better relationship? I almost flipped. I'm telling you, I could not believe it. My mother, in a million years, I would never believe that. And I said, there's two things, Mom. More than anything, I would love to hear you say, I love you. I had never heard that in my entire life. I hadn't heard my mother say that to any of my siblings. She just didn't know how to do it, I guess. Or maybe she said it and I didn't hear it. And you know, I could hear her on the other end of the line, and she said it, and the second thing. And I said, I really need you to stop hanging up the phone when I give you a response that you don't like. Because she would say, oh, F this, using that word, and slam the phone down. And it was just like she shut me out, like I didn't matter, like my thoughts or my feelings held no, you know, she didn't give a damn. And it just hurt me terribly. And I wouldn't have brought it up if she hadn't asked me, but she did. And I'm here to tell you, as a result of that, and she said, I will do that, Judy. I will do that. And I said, Mom, the only thing and she said, I love you. I have always loved you. You are my blessed child. But, you know, she never said this. So it was really quite a phenomenal amends. And I thought, Oh my God, if I could ever do anything like walk the beach with my mom or take a trip with her or go to the market with her or just anything, just skip. I don't care. If I could do, maybe I could go line dancing with my mother. I would just love to do anything with my mom. And I have to tell you, we did all of those things and more. We got crazier than two bed bugs. We were like Mutton Jeff. And I was with her right up until, and helped take care of her when she got really sick at the end. And, right before she passed, I said, "Oh, Mama, this is so hard." And she said, "I know, Judy, but everything's going to be all right." So if you have, if you have a situation like that with a family member, I would highly suggest, that you try that little question. And I'll tell you later on, when I was employed at the hospital, I had a couple of employees that just seemed to really like they couldn't stand me. And during their when we had an opportunity to talk in private, I posed that question to them, and they were very candid in their responses and gave me a better understanding of where they were coming from and some things that I could change to help them feel better in the workplace. And when I left employment at that facility, the whole team gave me a plaque that said, what did it say? acquaintances. Anyway, we choose to be your friends. We choose that, the acquaintances. We had nothing to say about it because here we are in a workplace over which we have no control, but we do have control about who we choose to be our friend, and we choose you, and so it just was, it's helped me in a lot of different circumstances. And of course, I passed that question on to a lot of the girls that I sponsor. How many have used it? A couple. Not all of them, a couple. It's you have to have a lot of courage. You have to be really, really hurting to step forward in that one. That's my thinking about it. I want to go on and share with you. I'll take the IRS. How did I make amends to them? Well, from the time that was the only time I ever lied on my tax return, and it will be the only time. So I think that's a good working amends that I have going on forever. And of course, I had to pay the fine, and had to pay that money that I owed them. So the other part of that amends is not to be stuck on that prideful action that I took, and to let go of that shame and just know that I never have to do that again. Part of amends and understanding what you're doing as you make them is that you lighten the load that you carried. You don't have to walk around heavy like that. And that's one of the interesting things that happened with my mom too. I changed from a gal who thought I never should have been born, who had a mom who didn't care, into a girl that knew my mom loved me. And if you want to see what that looks like physically, it's pretty nice, so instead of walking with my head down and being on guard, I became very open, and it was easy to be vulnerable with my mom, and the intimacy that her and I shared was just amazing, really amazing. So that's the deal with the IRS, and then we'll take this is kind of a hard one, that ex-husband that I knew that I never should have married, and I married anyway. So I have to tell you, before I began working on amends with Mary, he my ex-husband called me and said, Judy, I have amends to make to you, and I was wondering if you're open. And I said, you know, because I'm a good AA member, yes, I am. And do you want it, you know, in a letter or in person? And I said, no, in person is fine, let's go for coffee. So he takes me to a restaurant, and, you know, he wants to buy me dinner, and I'm like, no, I just coffee's fine. I don't need dinner. So he made amends. And then the son of a bitch, here's what he said to me. He goes, wait till you hear this. You're going to love it. Now, he's a member of AA. This is something you're never supposed to do. He said, so now I'm ready to hear your amends. I know, isn't that great? So I got my little purse and I stood up and I walked right out of that restaurant, because of course I didn't drive there with him. I met him there. I knew better. And I said to myself in my head, I'll never effing make amends to that son of a bitch. You know, what a self-righteous piece of shit he is. I'm telling you, I just, I have to be honest, right? So, yes, yeah, you guys can get a good, so, but I mean, the whole, you know, the whole thing could have been avoided had I just not married him. I mean, that's the thing. And I'm all stuck up and, you know, look at what a piece of shit he is. Just so I couldn't bring myself around to understand, whoa, wait a minute. What is the root cause of this? Your stupid pride, your lack of patience, your misunderstanding about what is God's will, your inability to ask for direction. What do you think? Do you think this is a good idea? No, I didn't ask anybody that. I figured I knew. I'm grown up. Oh, Lord. So, I mean, that took a really long time. So here I've sat on that and sat on it. Now, this man got really sick, and before we were divorced, he had to have major heart surgery. And, of course, I had the insurance, so we won't go into that, how, you know, how that caused a resentment. And I had to pay for his, you know, heart surgery. And then, you know, in our community, everybody knew both of us, so that was difficult. And then he'd get sick again, and people in the community would come and say, do you know anything about your ex-husband and how he's feeling? I heard, you know, he had to go to the hospital again. And I here's my answer. The son of a bitch is never going to die, so don't worry about it. You know, he's going to live forever. Don't worry. And he never died. He just kept living. And then finally, several years ago, he did die. I did not make amends to him. I kept my promise. I'm not making amends to him. And so here's the thing. I sponsor a woman out in New Mexico, and she has 39 years of sobriety, and I adore her. And we were talking one day. We do steps over the phone, and we were talking about step 9. And I said to her, there's an amend I haven't made yet. One. This one. And I'm never going to make it. And she said, really? She said, well, I had one like that too. And she said, sometimes you just have to wait until the willingness happens. And I thought to myself, I wonder why I never had the willingness. What's holding me back there? And it got me thinking. And this is the joy and the protection that we have when we make good connections and acquaintances in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Because in a very non-judgmental way, we can help each other to see things, perhaps, that we can't see on our own. And, step 8 says, became willing to make amends to them all. It doesn't say all but one, does it? Except when to do so would injure them or others. But, that's step 9. But you know, there wasn't anything about me making amends to this man that was going to cause him any harm. It probably would have made his life better, you see. So I start thinking along these terms, and now I'm thinking to myself, you're nothing but a piece of shit. You have all this sobriety, and look what you're doing, you know? Look what you caused a man to go through life thinking it was all his fault. And, he didn't really think that. No, he really thought it was all my fault. Well, whatever. And you could have taken care of that. You could have cleaned it up, and you chose not to. So here you are causing harm, and you still, you know, you have 40 years of sobriety, 41 years of sobriety, and now 42 stinking years of sobriety, and you still have this one amends you haven't made. So what are you going to do? And so, after, you know, he passed, and I don't know where he's buried. And I also have to tell you, there were a couple little girls, new ones, that I was working with, and we were doing steps, and I found myself saying to them, there's an amend I'm never going to make. This is what I'm telling a new person. I'm never going to make amends to that ex-husband of mine, the one that I met when I first got in Alcoholics Anonymous. And they didn't, you know, they didn't say, like, why. I guess they figured, oh, she has these years, she ought to know what she's doing, you know, if she's a...
Lord.
So I, you know, not only did I have to make amends to my ex-husband through some meditation, through some writing, through some honest self-appraisal, but now I had to go and talk to those new girls that I sponsored and explain to them I did make amends and I was wrong in the way that I shared that information with you. And I'm so grateful that someone had the courage to call me out on that and set me on a higher road so that I could stay on this journey rather than getting maybe snarled up in the future. I don't know what would have happened had I not given some consideration. And here's another important thing that I can consider when I look at my experience that I have in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, how do you get friends in New Mexico when you live in Ohio? And I can tell you about that journey, but it's a spiritual thing that happens. It's a thing that happens over which I have no control. And people are brought into my life, and I believe that the people that are brought into my life have a purpose, and that we stay connected. We, and ladies, we become soul sisters, so to speak, soul posse. Some people call it a tribe. I heard soul posse out in California, and I like that terminology. I kind of I keep that close to my heart. And they're people that have an impact. There's something about them that says integrity and honesty and courage and love and spirituality and a lot of other things. And you learn this by building a relationship with them. And when you get a phone number and you're out of town and then you pick up the phone and you call that person and, you know, and you have a, and you begin building a relationship, then I think that's what a higher power intends for me to do with these new acquaintances. Now, if I wasn't open to that, if I wasn't open to getting numbers, if I wasn't open to calling people, if I wasn't open to experiencing new adventures and new acquaintances, how would this ever happen? And so I have to remain open. And it is the best joy It is the best joy to be involved with women at that level. And I'm sure those of you that have had that experience know. And so I look back and I just know that the good Lord, you know, has got me. Even when I don't even know what I'm doing, he still has got me. He's got me covered. And he does things in my life that just are amazing to me. He's a busy man. If he puts as much time and effort into everyone's life as I think he does in mine, holy mackerel, he's working overtime, huh? So those are the things from my amends that I wanted to share with you. And I have a couple other things I want to share with you. First of all, the past, this is hard to let go of your past and to be forgiving of yourself, but we have to think of the past as a reference, not a place of residence, huh? Let's not live there. It's just a reference point. This is the way I used to be, and I've grown because I'm not that way anymore. Oh, I still have a little bit of that, but it's not as bad as it was. I'm moving forward. I'm getting better. I can see it. And if I can't see it, my friends can see it, and they remind me or tell me. And I want to bring out that I believe there's three parts to an apology. And the first part is to say you're sorry. I am sorry. I'm not here to talk about anything about you, but I am sorry. And I want you to know it was my fault. And I understand what I did to you. I understand that because I've just told you what it was. I've given you examples. You know that I understand. And then thirdly, the part that asks, what do I need to do? What can I do to make this right? And if you can identify those three parts when you are trying to make amends, then that's going to work for you. And then also I wanted to say, you know, amends works two ways, you know. I've had a couple little girls come to me and make amends, and I've had a gal that I just held in high esteem come and make amends to me. And it's really very different to sit on the other side of an amends and to listen to the person and give them the space that they need to be able to, you know, get rid of that shame and guilt so they can move on, and to let them know that you're not judging them and that you love them just the way they are, and they're gonna go on, and your best wish is that they continue this wonderful road to recovery. That's a real gift that I've been able to have in this program. I know I've asked some people, you know, has anyone ever made amends to you? And I'm surprised how many people have said, no one ever has, because I've had quite a few amends made to me. So I think that's about what I got for you today. Yeah, that's about as honest as I can get. And, you know, yeah, here we are. We're all together. We're all doing well. And we're going to continue on this journey together. I love you all. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Judy. So we have time for a couple questions. If you're here in the room, you can go ahead and raise your hand. If you're on Zoom and you have a question, go ahead and just unmute yourself and speak up. Who would like to get us started? Paul is going to get us started.
Oh, God. Thank you, Judy. Judy, my question relates to the three amends that you made on your own prior to having Mary as a sponsor. I don't know if you ever went back to them, but my real question is, if you were to have done them after Mary became your sponsor, what would have been different?
No, I never went back to them. Mary told me that it was fine what I did.
Yeah.
She actually, Mary was the one who taught me there's no wrong way to work the steps.
Okay, thank you.
So she said, Mary said my intent of heart was in the right place, and I did fine. She said, but now we're gonna do it a little different way in order.
Who else would like to ask Judy a question? Anyone on Zoom?
I'm Patty, your colleague.
Hi, Patty.
Thank you so much, Sister. I love to participate in these Zoom meetings to hear you share about your experience in doing the steps. You know, I love what you shared about forgiving of ourselves, and this part, our past is a reference point. I love that, you know, because, you know, I can still carry some of the guilt, especially now that my son and I don't have our relationship has been strained quite a few years, and that guilt comes up every now and then, but I just have to keep believing and having hope that that I have a higher power, he has a higher power, and I'll just continue to pray for him. But I loved how you brought that information up. Thank you. Love you.
I love you, Betty. Thank you, honey.
Time for one more question, maybe? If not, then thank you, Judy.
You're welcome.